listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
Welcome in to the episode of the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media. As always, I'm your host, Don Knock. You can follow me on Twitter at Don Knock. You can also follow the Apollo HOU main account, the Apollo Launchpad Twitter account. Follow the Twitch account at Apollo HOU on there. And then follow the Apollo Podcast Network YouTube channel. Our pods do go up there in video format if y'all are interested in those, as well as some of the other Apollo Network podcasts in video form. So, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Paolo Alves, a.k.a. Prodigy. Prodigy, tell the people where they can find your stuff.
What's up, everyone? Y'all can find me at Paolo Alves NBA. That's P-A-U-L-O-A-L-V-E-S-N-B-A. Everything I do, from podcasts to articles to live shows on Twitter Spaces, will find itself linked on there.
Perfect. And there you go. And today we are joined by one of the people that's in a couple of group chats with us. We've been getting to know him more and more over, you know, the recent months. He is one of the premier KJ Martin fan accounts on Twitter. So we will do a little bit of KJ Martin talk a little bit later in the pod. He wants us to call him E. So that's what we're gonna address him as today. And his account is at KJ Martin Season, S-Z-N, on Twitter. Go ahead and tell the people anything else that you want them to know about you real quick.
Hey, how's everyone doing? No, it's pretty much it. KJ Martin Season on Twitter. A lot of KJ propaganda and just a lot of random stats.
Love it, love it. So today we are joining you on Tuesday the 8th. The Rockets are coming off of a back-to-back against the Memphis Grizzlies and the Miami Heat. In the game against the Grizzlies, the Rockets, you know, kind of came out a little bit flat in the first half and then really turned it on towards the second half and closed that game out very strong. You know, something we haven't seen a ton of from this Rockets team, just, you know, because of a lot of young guys here, not great clutch play from this team. But in that game, they did have a lot of good stuff going on down the stretch. Defensively, they look really good. Prod, we're going to go to you first. Just keep it to just the Grizzlies game for now. You know, you can kind of get into it, broke the losing streak. You know, some of the X and O stuff on that, whatever direction you want to take that.
Yeah, the Grizzlies game, I've always been someone who supports getting close games every game and playing the young guys a lot and losing in the end to your draft pick at the end of the year is better. So from that standpoint, actually winning the game from a long-term perspective probably wasn't the best. We are back tied with the Magic for the worst record in the league. And for those who are not familiar, that's important because you can only drop four spots down from where you are at heading into the lottery. So if you're the last team in the league, you can only drop to five, and outside the top five has a huge gap between like fifth and sixth. So from that standpoint, it wasn't great, but it was a great, great game from the perspective of our young backcourt and even Christian Wood. Y'all know I'm not, you know, the biggest Christian Wood supporter, but he was trying hard this game. He still had like some boneheaded moments. He was still bringing the ball up the court that people hate and I hate as well. He did attempt like some crazy isolation shots that I also don't appreciate, but you live with those if he's having a good game. The most important part about this game for Christian Wood was the fact that he was playing defense, actually. Like, he was actually stepping up to the challenge and actually playing decent defense on Ja Morant, who's one of the best players in the league this season. And then, besides that, I think Jalen had 27 points. He was really good. They gave him the ball. They let him, as we've been calling out for a couple of weeks now, they let him get in rhythm, like, actually runs the pick and roll. He had some good reads, playmaking wise as well. It really felt like it really feels like it's clicking for him. it feels like when he actually plays like the guy and he's given the opportunity to be the guy, he takes some of those superstar shots, which I'll call it that, the mid-range shots, the like the crazy floater, like using his athleticism type of shots. And he, as we said before, he is a player that very much works on feel and like as who he shall not be named said, he's a hooper. And for those types of players to get in rhythm, to have the ball, it's important. And the Grizzlies game and the last few games have been the perfect examples of that. He has gotten more chances, and he's done well with those chances. And besides Jalen, another big story of the game was KPJ, who really took advantage of the fact that Steven Adams cannot guard Christian Wood. Like, they're completely different players, both on offense and on defense. And he took advantage of the fact that Steven Adams was out of his element guarding, like, more of a perimeter big. And he took that, and he got to the rim a lot more. And that's a really good improvement for KPJ, because this season it seems like he's been settling into jump shots a lot more. And one of the key factors for him to become a point guard is to be able to balance out the game and get both. Get layups, get threes, get your teammates involved, read what the defense is giving you. And against the Grizzlies, it was a perfect game, like from his standpoint, for him to show that. And he did. So the future look like, that's one of those games where you look back at in the offseason and you clearly say, okay, the future's looking bright. KPJ is definitely a part of the future, so let's treat it as that and draft accordingly, I would say.
All right, over to you, E. You know, how did you see this Grizzlies game? Obviously, you know, Prob wasn't pleased actually getting the win here. I think there were some people that were pleased. We've talked about this a couple other times in the past of like, you know, every now and then it's good to get a win for morale purposes. How did you view the win against the Grizzlies, and how do you view, you know, how the team played in general?
Yeah, I mean, Prod knows how much I don't like it when this team wins, but the win against Memphis I felt like was needed, because like it was just a very bad streak. I think it was a 10-game, 8-game losing streak. And other than that, it was just a very hype game. Like the Jalen Green move on Brandon Clark when he put him on skates, I don't remember the last time I got that hyped for something. That move just got me out of my seat. I was amazed at how good that was. And one thing I really want to touch on is the field goals attempted during that game. Like, the shot distribution was amazing. KPJ had 21 field goals attempted. Jalen had 17. And Christian Wood had 12, which is, like, perfect balance in my opinion. I'd like it if Jalen took more and KPJ took less. But, you know, you can't win them all.
Yeah, for sure. The one thing I do want to address in this game, and you know, it was a good win. The team looked really good. Like you said, the shot distribution, I really enjoyed that. Free throw shooting continues to be an issue for this team. You know, the best free throw shooter on this team during this game was Eric Gordon at 3 of 4. You know, Christian Wood shot 11 free throws. Jalen shot 9 free throws. And Christian Wood was at 72%, which for Christian Wood, I'll take that. That's a good free throw shooting night for Christian Wood for sure. But just a lot of points left on the board in terms of free throw shooting. Şengün, 50%. Kevin Porter Jr. 60%. So definitely some stuff to be had there in terms of the free throw shooting. I really like the assist distribution as well. It seems like Coach Silas really doesn't want to have as much of a heliocentric offense as we did back in the Mike D'Antoni days. And you know, there's benefits and there's pros and cons of that, right? But in this game, you really saw a lot of guys get involved in the playmaking. And, you know, I think 4 guys had 3 assists or more. So we like to see that. KPJ led the team with 5. And not too bad on the turnovers of this game as well. 22 turnovers. We've had worse. Would like to see that kept a little bit lower. Sorry, 17 turnovers. But overall, you know, I'd say a good win. Prod, do you have something to close this segment out? Or to start to close the Grizzlies game out?
Not really. I think this was also the game where, or one of the games where KPJ kind of rolled his ankle and played through it. Or am I confusing it with Garrison Matthews?
I think both of them are the Heat game. KBJ may have done it twice. I know KBJ
just does
time.
It all the time nowadays.
Yeah. I don't know. We can get into this real quick. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but how do y'all feel about the KPJ should wear high tops discussion?
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not sure how that helps. I mean, I know Christian Wood did for a while after his nasty ankle injury. Like, at some point, it's just being unlucky and stepping on people's foots and feet. And then KPJ, who also has his fair share of just twisting, like, an ankle just by himself, that you just have to, like, be more intentional with what you're doing. We know KPJ likes to look stylish. Let's put it like that, when he's dribbling the ball and look like, oh, I'm so much better than this, and that's kind of his vibe. And sometimes it feels like he really sloppy the way he tries to do stuff. I think maybe if he focused a little bit more on what he's doing, he wouldn't have to do as many last second adjustments to his movement, because that's, at least on my experience, that's what causes ankle rolls, is when you're expecting to move a certain way and then last second you need to change the direction you're going, or you need to change your pivot foot, and you put your foot wrong by a centimeter or so, and that's enough to roll an ankle. And considering how much KPJ has done this season and how important he is for this team, I mean, I'm not even sure what you can do to help, because it just happens to some players more than others.
E, do you have any thoughts on the KPJ wearing high tops?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, since he's with Puma, I didn't know if Puma had any high tops in general, but I looked them up right now and they don't really look like the best shoes. So maybe that's why he's not going for them. Because I feel like he's the type of guy, you know, yeah, just like Prod said, to just be flashy a little bit, pull off some flash if he can. I don't know how that helps exactly.
I think looking back on the example of Steph Curry, who, you know, he had one of the worst runs of luck in terms of his ankles. You know, he really did a lot to strengthen his lower body, and he wears like very rigid ankle braces. It's not just high top shoes. So I think if you're going to go that route, you need to go all the way in with some ankle braces and make sure you're doing enough lower body training, some like proprioception, balance training. I think those things can help. And that's what it's reported that Curry did. But I think just going to the high top shoes it's not the fix all that some people are kind of crediting that as. But the Rockets did play another game the following day against the Miami Heat. This was a game where the team came out the first quarter, looked really good. I think Jalen made like three threes, maybe four in the first quarter total. Rockets were up. Everything's looking good. We kind of come into halftime, and Tyler Hero really went off in the last 2 minutes of the first half, got the Heat back in the game with a little lead. And it seemed like the Rockets, you know, they adjusted so well coming out of halftime in the Grizzlies game and against the Heat. Just they weren't able to make the types of adjustments that they did against the Grizzlies. E, we're going to go to you first. You know, what was your big takeaways from the Heat game yesterday?
The first big takeaway is that it was Alpi's first time registering 30 minutes as a Rocket, which was like shocking to me because I thought he did it at least once before. But to continue on Alperen Sengun, his defense on Bam Adebayo, who's like one of the best bigs in the league, was amazing. Like before the game, I dropped some bets on Bam Adebayo to go off because I was expecting him to be guarded by Christian Wood. And all those bets did not work out at the end, thanks to Alperen Sengun. But you know, I'm not mad about it. I'd rather see these young guys showing what they got instead of me making money. And yeah, I was going to talk about the KPJ and Gary Bird ankle situation. Like, I just felt like Gary Bird shouldn't have continued the game, because he was hobbling, he was catching up, he was like jogging on the court. And now, like, I'm looking at the minutes, KJ actually ended up playing more minutes than him. which he played 20 and KJ ended up playing 33. So maybe there was something there, like, but there was nothing reported on the injury report today. So might just be like something that happened mid-game and he's already over it.
Yeah, and piggybacking on that, man, is it just me? This is going to be a weird tangent to go on, but is Tyler Hero not like the most detestable little player? I cannot like him. Like, what triggered me last night, besides him going off, was like KPJ is clearly injured, clearly on the floor, and they get a stop, like they get a turnover, and they come back, and Hero just shoots like an uncontested catch and shoot three, makes it, and goes absolutely nuts. And I'm like, dude, you just made the three because there's a guy on the floor. Like, Jesus Christ, like, how can you be this hyped over the three that you made playing 4-on-5 with a guy hurt on the ground? I mean, it's just, I just have an irrational amount of hate for Tyler Hero, especially ever since of the Harden trade talks. I was like, please don't get Tyler Hero, please. Like, I do not want to build around this guy. But regardless, pulling it back to the game, and that was fundamentally my favorite game of the season, just because Josh Christopher was playing really well, KPJ was going off, Jalen Green was going off, KJ Martin was going off, and more importantly, we finally got to see Dish and Nix get actual minutes in the rotation, and that's a huge deal. Because he's killing it in the G League. The natural progression is to bring him up and play him with the main team and see how he does, see if he needs to go back to the G League. And he finally played tonight. And he proved that all of the believers in him were absolutely right. He probably has the best basketball IQ, like the best floor general skills in this team at the moment. It's just night and day how he made look a unit of him, who is like, he can shoot, but if he has the ball, it doesn't really matter if he can shoot or not. If he's commanding the offense. And then he had KJ Martin, who is an okay shooter, like 35% on two attempts. They had Jayson Tate, who's notably a non-shooter, or he'll shoot, but he'll shoot a bad percentage, so nobody respects his shot. David Nwaba and Gary Bird. So there's one shooter on the floor, and you're the point guard expected to run an offense for your first game in, like, actual game in the NBA. And this is, like, the circumstances you're given. And he took those circumstances and he made it work. And that's what a point guard needs to do. He needs to work with the talent that's around him. And he was put in a tough situation and he made it work. And that lineup, we saw him make it work in the first stint, in the first quarter, and then it completely go down the drain in the second quarter with a similar lineup, because it was actually that hard to run a lineup like that. So he had, like, he didn't have the most efficient of games, but you could just tell that he was not out of place, and he was close enough to what Schroeder gives you that you should be giving him a chance as a 20-year-old. That turned 20 years old like 2 weeks ago or a month ago. He is clearly like a middle tier at least prospect, and you've got him on, I know that now you've got him on a long-term deal locked up, but just can't hammer it home enough that he needs a chance and hopefully gets it to start next season. And hopefully the bringing back Schroeder talk was mostly posturing for whatever reason, and he actually gets a chance next year because he absolutely deserves it, and he showed it.
Yeah, I didn't get a good preview or a good display of him shooting. He only took three shots from three. He was one of three from those, but looked like he was very strong driving in this game. And, you know, Miami's a team that has good, tough defenders. They're not someone who you can just kind of bully at the point of attack, right? You got Lowry, Butler, Bam is a great defender as well. PJ, right? These are guys that, you know, you have to be strong with the ball to get by. I think the other thing for me in this game, this is, I think it's 6 out of 7 games now where Jalen Green has the most field goal attempts on the team. So just continuing that positive trend of, you know, Jalen getting a bulk of the shots. Obviously, a lot of that came in the first quarter. I think the team needs to do a better job at not just, you know, feeding the hot hand, but making sure that Jalen doesn't just get left out of the offense for, you know, big stretches of the game at the time. Because the second quarter, when he came back in from his rest, he really wasn't involved in the offense that much. I think he took like one shot in the second quarter. If you're going to go basically that stretch and then into halftime, come out of halftime and try to get rolling again after the type of start that he had, it's just going to be difficult, right? You need to make sure he's getting the ball if he comes out, you know, that on fire. He finished the game with pretty good stats, but 50% from the field, 40% from three. Didn't get to the free throw line at all. No one really brought this up that much, but it was a really big point of debate on Twitter last night, or a big point of contention on Twitter last night. But, you know, Miami was just getting a lot of charge calls. They were getting a lot of getting away with a lot of physicality. And, you know, you always hear that, oh, this is the what you get as a reputation when your team is like, you know, quote unquote good at defense, right? That they let you get away with more stuff. But some of that was pretty frustrating last night. And obviously the Rockets have no one on the roster last night that has even played a minute in the playoffs. So those guys aren't going to get that type of respect from the referees. There's only so much you can do. Yeah, this game ended up not being decided by the refs, I'll say. But at the same time, you know, there were some guys that like did get a few calls. Şengün is the guy that typically gets some decent respect from the refs. Kenyon Martin Jr. got 6 free throws, 6 for Şengün as well. I'm converting a few more of those. Again, you know, 68% from the free throw line in this game. Again, not super great there. That's going to just be a recurring issue probably for the rest of the season. This team just needs to shoot the free throws better. But I'm going to call it there. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to do a little bit more of KJ Martin talk, since we have, you know, one of the leading KJ Martin accounts in here with us. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And continuing on here on the Launchpad podcast. So, as we mentioned in the first segment, we are joined by one of the leading KJ Martin fan accounts on Rockets Twitter. So we're going to shift gears now into kind of like a season recap of KJ, how he's looked like, you know, month by month, and what he's looked like in terms of, you know, how it would differ between last year and this year. You know, last year, I think the Rockets had the most players on the roster like to play in a game in like the history of the NBA. So you're getting these crazy roster readjustments. They had guys getting injured left and right. You had trades happen and then those guys not play, and just such roster instability last year. But, you know, with that, last season, KJ was able to, you know, get a decent volume of minutes in certain amount of games. He had a couple games where he was above 36 minutes. I think 7 games that he was above 36 minutes last season. This season, 36 minutes flat is his season high. And he had his second highest minutes total of the season against Miami when, you know, we had Christian Wood out. I think Eric Gordon was out and Schroeder was out as well. So he just hasn't gotten that same volume of minutes this season that he was able to last year when we didn't have as many guys really battling for development. It was, you know, whoever was healthy was going to get thrown in there. And KJ did do a good job of staying healthy last season compared to some of the other, compared to some of the other guys. But so far this season also had a pretty good track record of health, but like I mentioned, you know, not getting the same type of volume of minutes. One of the things that was really positive for KJ coming out of last season was he closed the season shooting the ball extremely well. And going to the offseason, a lot of people were like, you know, if KJ Martin comes in and just, you know, kills it from three, we get some handle development, you know, this guy could really take off, you know, maybe even surplant Tate for the starting three position, or four, depending on, you know, what lineup they were going to have at the time. Obviously, the Rockets started the season with the double big lineup. But, E, we're going to go over to you real quick. You have KJ Martin's shooting data this year, month over month. So go ahead and get into that a little bit, and get into, you know, what you've seen from KJ in terms of, you know, how his attempts look from three, how they're coming in the flow of the offense, and, you know, how many attempts he's getting, you know, during those different stretches.
Yeah, all right. I'm just going to say immediately that it didn't count October because he had 10 minutes per game and he had 1 3 attempted the whole month. So we're just going to start from November, where he shot 48%. Oh, sorry, that's his field goal. He shot 32% on 1.8 attempts, which is pretty much like below what he shot last season. I think he shot 36 last season. And on December, he had the same thing, 32 on 2 attempts. In January, he had his season low so far with 30 on 2.1. But this is like where it gets good. In February, he shot 43% on 2.1 attempts. And so far in March, he's shooting 50% from three on 3.2 attempts a game. Now, I feel like these attempts are just like going to keep increasing with confidence because, for example, in the Miami game last night, he had only like pretty much one open look where he had a great shot and it didn't go in. But it surely feels like a confidence issue where he just needs to keep shooting. And eventually, you know, the stats, the percentage will catch up. And, you know, like his shots have come in greatly in the flow of the offense. They work and they make sense. You don't see him taking any threes that make you go, oh, why are you taking that three or why do you take that? And, you know, like because apparently Basketball Reference has him as a forward, as a small forward. So I'm just going to start calling him a three from now on. I'm going to look at his per 36. He's averaging 15 points a game with one block, one steal, 2.4 assists, and 6.8 rebounds, which in comparison to the guy that's starting over him, Jayshon Tate, who, before I just say these stats, I got nothing against Tate. He's one of my favorite players on the team. He can start whenever he wants, you know. This is just me, like, from what I see from watching the games. Tate is averaging 16.4 per 36, which is only 0.9 better than KJ. He's also averaging 0.7 blocks, which is lower than KJ's, but he's also averaging 1.3 steals, which is higher than KJ's. And of course, he has more assists and more rebounds just because, you know, he's the motor of the team. He's the guy. He's pretty much everywhere, which is why I really like watching him. And that's why I said, you know, there's nothing against Tate because you see him everywhere on the court. And yeah, that's pretty much all I had to say, just about KJ's improvement from three and about how good he's been when he gets the minutes.
Yeah, and with KJ, even going back to last season, it's always looked like with him, the more attempts he gets, the better he shoots. When he came into the lineup and he got to be a starter for a long period of time, he was shooting a lot better from three, and he was flashing even other stuff, attacking closeouts and hitting the open man, like when the help comes at the rim. The more opportunities he got, the better he looked. And then he had a really bad last 2-3 games last season that really tanked his percentages. But at that point, he was not afraid to shoot, right? And that's what you want. And then compared to Tate, Tate's just been the same thing his entire career in Houston. This is just, it's just what it is. Like, he's 26 years old. He's had 2 years in the NBA now. Even coming out of college and in New Zealand, he was not a good shooter. At some point, you've got to just trust that this is what these players, like, this is what Tate is, and I love him for it. But KJ is just a better fit with what we have going on right now. He's better at making the game easier for our guards. He's a better screen setter. He's a lot more selfless on offense. He runs a lot more dribble handoffs. He's a more confident shooter from three. His form looks a lot better. His percentage looks a lot better. And on defense, he is a lot more of a rim protector than Tate is. And while Tate is a better perimeter defender, the fact of the matter is, perimeter defense, if it's just a one-off player, doesn't really make that much of a difference compared to defense at the rim, where one player can affect any one of the other player's shots. On perimeter defense, you can only affect your man's shot. So, I don't know. At this point, it really felt at the beginning of the season that KJ got a little bit hard done by the arriving of Theis. And he lost a lot of minutes, and he lost a lot of confidence, and he's finally gaining that back. I think we should keep feeding him opportunities because he's done the most with them so far.
Yeah, earlier on this season, there was a game where the Rockets played the Milwaukee Bucks. And in that game, you know, I actually attended that game with my dad, and I was just thinking, you know, who do the Rockets have that they could put on Giannis, right? Tate makes a lot of sense, but you know, think about how much athleticism Tate's giving up to Giannis, and you know, Tate, I think his athleticism, especially in the comparison of him versus KJ specifically, I think it's kind of underrated a little bit. KJ is super springy. I think Tate may be a little bit more laterally fluid, but when I went to that game, I wanted to watch, you know, what would it look like to see KJ defending Giannis. And he actually got, you know, 5 or 6 good minutes defending Giannis. And, you know, you're not going to stop a guy like Giannis, right? He's just too big, too strong. But you know, I thought KJ did a pretty good job in that game. The big hype coming around KJ as a defender is someone who can be a weak side shot blocker. You know, he had the big run last year of blocking all the 7-footers. We know that, and we know that he can have an impact that way. The swing skills for me for KJ are one, his handle. I think if he can be more reliable as a driver and at least his handle be functional enough to tap into that athleticism, sometimes he doesn't look to shoot. But a lot of times teams will kind of play off of him because he's, you know, viewed as a non-shooter, and that will give him a runway where he can kind of get downhill a little bit and use athleticism to finish around guys or even, you know, dunk over guys. I think his handle improving will really open up a lot more for him that way. And then, you know, like E was talking about, the shooting, of course, is going to open up a bunch of different things for him as well. So those are two big things I've been watching from KJ all season long. It does seem like his handle's gotten a little bit better, but not, it hasn't made any sort of, you know, superstar type of trajectory leap. You know, if you look at a guy like Jabari Smith in the draft, who we're going to talk about in a little bit here, that's a big swing skill for him as well. And, you know, Jabari Smith is a great shooter, but is that same element of he needs to be able to put the ball on the floor and create in space. And so it's for someone that's that athletic, right? You do so much by having a better handle and be able to get wherever he wants to go on the floor. And he's also very strong, right? So if he's able to put his shoulder into guys, you can create a lot of space that way and elevate. And he's been trying some more like reverse finishes and kind of crafty finishes as well. I don't want that to kind of get missed in this either. There's a lot of guys, and Jalen fell into the same trap early on of, you know, hey, I'm Jalen Green and I have, you know, 45-inch vertical. I'm just going to dunk over people. And, you know, that can work at times, but this is the NBA, right? You have guys like Rudy Gobert, guys like Giannis, guys like, you know, name your elite rim protection type of center. You're not going to be able to get away with that all the time. So that's the other thing I want to watch from KJ Martin as we've rounded the season is how can he finish not necessarily above the rim as much, but finish more consistently with craft and with change of speeds at the rim and on drives. E, I think you had one more stat you wanted to bring up for KJ before we finish up this section.
No, I mean, I just wanted to talk about his weak side defense, about the blocking that you guys pretty much talked about. I mean, I'm pretty sure KJ Martin is the first ever player to block every 7-footer in the league. I'm not sure if that stat is true, but it seems like a true stat. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I just wanted also to like talk a little bit about, because it's a very small sample size, But the LP and KJ minutes are probably my favorite minutes on the team right now, because LP somehow always finds KJ under the basket for the easy dunk, easy layup. Sorry. And yeah, like the finger roll that he had yesterday against the Heat was also very impressive. They're just always comboing off of each other, and it's pretty, pretty fun to watch.
Right. And he's, if we're being realistic, he's always going to be a play finisher at the NBA level, and then it's going to come down to how good his defense is. And that's also been getting better as the season's gone on. He was not a good perimeter defender last season. I feel like he's better at moving his feet this season. But, and as a play finisher, that's pretty much, if he can work out and be what we think he can be, as someone who can be a weak side shot blocker, who can switch on the perimeter, who can knock down threes, and who can be a good finisher on the basket and a good cutter, that's pretty much all you want, and that's pretty much the prototypical guy you want playing next to Alperen Şengün. So if Şengün's the center of the future, then betting a lot on KJ Martin from the Rockets' standpoint also makes a lot of sense, because the fit's pretty seamless, with as good as of a passer as Şengün is. And we've been, and we'll segue into the next segment, a little teaser. A lot of people have been talking about who's the better fit with Şengün out of the fours that we could draft next season between Banchero, Chet Holmgren, and Jabari Smith. And a lot of the factors that are brought up is can they space the four, and can they be a weak side shot blocker or a weak side rim protector? And KJ fits both of those descriptions, so it would be a really good investment for the Rockets to really find out what they have with KJ and see if there's a high tier role player there to be developed that fits really well with, I mean, those qualities just fit really well with any system in the NBA nowadays.
For sure. So that's going to do it for our segment here. We're running perfect on time. When we come back, we're going to do a little bit of conference tournament preview, for the top three guys in the draft. Some things we like about them, some things we want to see them do or prove to us in those conference tournaments. And then we may get a little bit of Lakers preview in. We'll see how we're looking on time, but don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And moving into our final segment here on the Launchpad Podcast. So it is March. That means NCAA conference tournaments, as well as the NCAA March Madness tournament. Today, starting literally right as we're recording this, Chet Holmgren is taking on St. Mary's in their conference tournament. I believe it's the final. We're going to go through four or five guys and just say, you know, what we want to see out of them, what we want them to demonstrate to us in these conference tournaments to increase, you know, our perception of them and their potential draftability for the Rockets, right? So we're going to start with Chet. He's about to play. They're literally running on the court right now as we're recording this. Prod, you know, what do you want to see from Chet in this conference tournament?
Right. And both in the conference tournament and on the actual, like, March Madness tournament, the thing about Chet is there's two key things. You want to see if his, like, shot blocking and his post defense are real against good players, because it's easy to inflate those stats against bad teams that are going to, like, dribble themselves into a corner and then attempt a shot, and you get a hand to it with your insane wingspan and you get a blocked shot, and you can stack up seven of those in a game pretty easily against bad teams. Just ask Walker Kessler about it. He'll tell you that pretty quickly. So I'm looking forward to seeing his shot blocking against good teams that are going to generate good shots, like NBA level shots, in terms of where they're taken from. And then I'm looking forward to seeing how he does in the post against better players, because a lot of people are scared that at the NBA level that he'll get bullied under the rim because of his frame. So that's another factor, that the better the competition, the more you can scale what he's doing to the NBA level. And there's a lot of good bigs in this draft class. And I mean, even against Banchero, we saw both sides of the coin. We saw him block Banchero, and we saw him get bullied by Banchero and scored on. But they played so long ago at the beginning of the season that getting more reps of watching him do this stuff against like high-level power forwards will definitely be something that I'm looking forward to. And then after that is, once again, defensively, how well can he move his feet on the defensive end against better teams? People like to overreact to highlights of him getting his ankles broken and falling to the floor and getting blown by. If you actually watch the games, that's not what happens most of the time. Most of the time he keeps his distance and he leverages his insane wingspan to get a contest off while standing so far back that he really can't get blown by. So, once again, against better competition, against quicker guards, against shiftier guards, it's going to be good. It's going to be good reps to get some more knowledge on how he does against those types of players, because that's going to be key towards knowing, can he play the 4 at the NBA level, or can he be a switchable 5 at the NBA level, versus is he just a Rudy Gobert type of 5 that's going to be an insane rim protector, but you got to scheme your defense accordingly to not have him hang out on the perimeter as much.
Yeah, for me... you raised some good points there. Definitely want to look at him developing in those areas that you mentioned. I want to see him take some threes kind of off the catch and some threes while he's kind of like pick and pop against better competition, because it's very easy for him to shoot over people. People have compared him shooting to, you know, Porzingis or Durant, which I thought was kind of gratuitous. But I think for me, I want to see how versatile his shot is in some of these games, where he's going to have guys that can stick with him a little bit better, kind of trail him around screens and things of that nature. And then see what he can do off the dribble. And that was a really big point coming into the season, was, hey, you know, this guy has a handle. He can create for himself and things like that. So I want to see what his handle looks like holding up to scrutiny against better defenders and maybe a little bit stronger defenders. So that's the big things I'm looking for, you know, in addition to what you mentioned, Prod. Moving on to our second guy, Jabari Smith, right? Smith, I think...
You're going to come into my podcast and talk about Jabari as the number 2 guy and have Paulo as the number 3. Do you even know who I am? I'm joking.
And we're not ranking these guys. This is not a ranking of these guys. I'm just moving on to the next prospect. But yeah, I think for Jabari, the things that you're looking for are pretty easy, but they're also things that he may not necessarily be able to prove in this short of a stretch, right? We mentioned earlier the handle, right? Can he develop a handle to where he's able to create for himself offensively? His shot looks very good. I'm not really concerned about that. I think that's going to translate pretty distinctly. Defense, what does he look like switched on to a lot of these really elite guards from other teams? I think that's something big to track for me. What are you looking for in terms of Jabari's game, Prague?
Right. So, as you said, the shooting's translatable. The way he gets this shot off, however, is the part that worries you and you wonder if it's translatable or not. Because at the college level, he's not facing as much size and athleticism as he does at the NBA level that will get into him. And he's a skinny guy as well. Like, people overplay how skinny Chet is. Jabari is a pretty skinny guy as well. And people are going to play into him, defend into him. And it's going to be good to see against more athletic defenders if he can still get away with just shooting over people. His release point is even higher than Chet's, as crazy as that may sound. But it will be really important to see, like, with more length, can he still shoot just over people? Because at the next level, as we've been saying, he's likely going to need a handle. But if he can go into the NCAA tournament and still just shoot over elite defenders like Kendall Brown or Sochan or Mathurin, if he can still do that, then it bodes well for him not even needing a handle to get his shot off at the next level. So it's going to make me feel a lot safer about it. Then on the defensive end, I'm not really scared of his mobility laterally. I think he'll do really well there. I still think he won't be scared of, like, he's someone who's not scared of taking the challenge as a weak side shot blocker. So on defense, I really don't have many questions. I think we pretty much know what he's going to be, and I don't think he'll get bullied in the post even more because he's just not going to be in a situation to defend the post very often, unless it's wings or guards who not really going to get physical into him, but will rather try to get a jump shot off, and his length will compensate for that. So, yeah, mostly how he shoots and how he scores, considering his lack of athleticism and a handle against better competition.
Perfect. So moving on to our third prospect, your namesake, prod Paolo Banchero. We're going to go over to you for Paolo first. What are you looking for from Paolo Banchero in the conference tournaments, and what do you feel like he needs to prove in his game to increase the desirability for the Rockets to draft him?
First of all, he needs to prove that he can be a good shooter. Like, he's been very inconsistently this season. Like, you can see him go 3-for-3 in some games, and then in some games he'll go 1-for-5 from three. So I need him to prove to me that he can hit consistently, like whenever we find him, if we draft him and find him open, I need him to prove to me that he can hit them. But also sometimes he can be reluctant to take those threes. Like, well, we don't need that on the team right now, especially with the way LP is going too. Sometimes, you know, I want LP to take the three, but he doesn't take it. And sometimes I see like Paolo Banchero, get lost on defense a lot. Like, maybe he sleeps a little bit, loses his focus. And, you know, if he can prove to me that he can handle his own on defense, he can handle his own on the perimeter, then in my opinion, he should be the guy for the Houston Rockets.
All right, Prague, go ahead and tell us what you think he needs to prove.
Yeah, so the shooting is definitely... like, his three-point shooting is going to be a key factor to making him more desirable for teams. But things I'm looking forward to, specifically in the NCAA tournament against better competition, are his ability to create from the perimeter other than a three-point shot. So he's, like, his handle, him crossing people over, happened as the season went on with good frequency. He's not shown us his step back three that we know he has from his high school level yet. And against better competition, he might be forced to use that game a little bit more. So I'm looking forward to that. And then a lot of what he is at the NBA level is going to depend on how switchable is he on defense. He's looked good against guards, I will say, so far. But most of the example, like, he so rarely gets switched onto guards that you don't really have examples against good teams, really good shifty guards, to base this opinion off of. So we saw him defend Isaiah Wong, and we saw him defend Charlie Moore, who are quick shifty guards. But those are about some of the only instances where he has been put in a situation to defend those types of players. So against better competition, once again, shiftier guards, I want to see how well he can do defensively of playing that balance of being close enough to contest a shot while being far enough away that your speed as a bigger guy than your opponent doesn't make you get blown by.
And I'm going to take this a little bit of a different direction. In the game against North Carolina, Banchero really came out hot in the first half, was making a lot of good decisions. And then that game really got away from them in the last few minutes of the second half. The Duke late game execution was not good, and you can put that on a variety of people, but you know, it's really a team that does rely on Banchero for a lot of playmaking. So I'm interested in what he looks like in crunch time. You know, that's not necessarily super translatable, but I'm interested to see what that looks like. I was listening to people talk about what Duke was as a clutch team for most of the season. I think you brought this up, Prod, that they just haven't been a good clutch team at all.
Yeah, it's a classic case of too many cooks in the kitchen. Yeah. They have comfortably six players who believe they're the guy to take the last shot in the game. That's usually just not a good idea because none of them are going to get enough reps to be good at it or to build confidence at it. So if one game you're going to have Trevor Keel take three clutch shots and the other game you're going to have Paul Banchero take three clutch shots and the other game you're going to have Wendell Moore or Jeremy Roach or AJ Griffin, you're going to struggle as a clutch team if you don't really have a plan and everybody thinks they're the guy. So, yeah. I'm also looking forward to seeing how Banchero looks like when games actually really, really matter. Because he felt like a guy that rose up to the challenge so far, except for the last game that we saw from him, curiously enough. So I'm also looking forward to seeing how locked in he looks at the tournaments if he actually gives it now.
Yeah, and for me, kind of like I was alluding to earlier there, I want to see what it looks like in crunch time. You know, a big selling point for Banchero is that he's a good decision maker. He's a high basketball IQ guy. And in that last game that I watched of theirs, it just really left a bad taste in my mouth in terms of what that execution looked like, especially from him late in the game. So we'll see how that looks coming out of the Duke squad there. But we're going to move on to two more guys. We'll stay with Duke real quick. AJ Griffin, what are you looking for out of AJ Griffin in the tournament, Prod?
Yeah, so with AJ, I'm not as high as some people are on him just because I don't see the shot creation upside. But it will be interesting to see how his athleticism continues to be on the rise. He was someone who's really athletic before college and then came in, had an injury, was out for a while, and we just didn't see him use his athleticism the way he used to before college. And it just looked quite flat-footed, to be completely honest with you. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that looks. I'm looking forward to seeing when he actually, again, gives a damn, how well he can keep up with guards and wings on the perimeter. Because he's a strong guy, but he's got to be quick enough to stay with guards if he's going to be an elite role player in this league, even a borderline all-star. And then in the reps that he does get to self-create, and that's not a lot on a team like Duke, who has a really strict system, we'll see how that looks as well on the offensive end. And yeah, once again, in a team as stacked as Duke, it's really hard to actually get sample sizes for a lot of these players because it's just a really all lives matter system as well. So
yeah, for sure. Sorry. With Griffin, yeah, like you said, he's slotting in to really be a potential high-level role player, and for him to make that leap into superstar, it would probably take a little bit more than he'd be willing to demonstrate in, you know, just this NCAA tournament format, just the conference tournament format. But, you know, just, yeah, come out and have a good showing, you know, shoot well, defend hard. I think that's just what I'm looking for him. It's getting close between AJ Griffin and Banchero at this point. Some people are starting to squeeze those guys together in that tier, but I don't think we're going to get too much to really differentiate those guys in this setting, but you know, we'll see how it goes. Our last guy that we're going to talk about is Jaden Ivey. Jaden Ivey, you know, very explosive shooting, has looked, you know, pretty good coming in this year. He went back to school for a sophomore season, so he is coming out as, you know, a little bit of an older guy, quote unquote. But playmaking has looked decent, maybe not, you know, starting NBA point guard caliber, a lot of tools there as a playmaker as well. And then, you know, again, like we said, the explosiveness, it's just something you can't teach, right? Same thing with Ja Morant coming in, same thing with Jalen Green coming in. Like, this level of athleticism, this level of explosiveness combined with virtually any level of skill development, right? You know, it gives you such an advantage coming in against players that don't have those type of physical tools. So for me, you know, kind of similar to AJ Griffin, right? I just want to see him come in, do what he's done for most of the year at a high level, distribute a little bit, get to the rim, see what he looks like finishing in transition, finishing in the half court. Yeah, pretty much that's what I think he's going to have to do. So, Prad, what are your thoughts on a guy from Purdue?
Yeah, he's someone who has all the tools, and then he's one of those guys that goes so fast that you're like, every time he's doing something, you're like, no, and then he does something really brilliant, and you're like, oh, okay, so this guy is a special talent. Against better teams, I'm looking forward to seeing his finishing. He is someone who takes some weird angles finishing and attempts some crazy shots. When he, like, if you don't give him someone to kick it out to, more likely than not, he's going to blow the finish. And I want to see him add on to the floater that he's shown like a couple of times already this season. I want to see against better teams with less space, he's going to resort to that floater like Ja Morant has so far in his NBA career. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing, was the shooting legit? Because he started off really hot, 45% plus, and he's calmed down all the way back to 36-37%. So that's a huge deal as well, because that's a lot of the safety of what the safety net was with him. When you draft these like really risky, uber athletic guys, the shooting with Ivy made me think, okay, so but worst case scenario, this guy can shoot, and if you can shoot at the NBA level, there will be a role for you. And then also, and then the last thing I'll touch on with him, I wonder if Purdue will give him a more prominent role on offense in the tournament, because in the regular season, like, you can afford to test out stuff with a lot of the guys and see what you have, but then come tournament time, you're going to rely on your best players, and for Purdue, that's clearly Ivy, so we'll see how that goes as well for him. Hopefully with higher hues that he can show us some more stuff.
Cool. So that's going to do it for us. E, do you have any other prospects you're interested in at all coming into the tournament? Well, you know, you're the guest here. If you wanted to talk about anyone else coming into the tournament, you know, now's the time.
No, I just really wanted to add one little point on AJ Griffin and Banchero.
Yeah. By all means.
Is that I need to see them do something off ball pretty much. Because like Banchero and AJ Griffin, as we said, like too many cooks in the kitchen at Duke. And like on this team, you have already Jalen Green, Kevin Porter Jr., Alperen Sengun, all these guys need to touch the ball in my opinion. So adding like Banchero or AJ Griffin or ball dominant guys is probably like going to mess with something. Going to mess with like the shot distribution or the touches. So I need to see Banchero and Griffin be good scorers offensively, hit their threes without really being the ball dominant guys that they've been so far.
Cool. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Of this crop, really, you know, Chet is a play finisher and Jabari is a play finisher right now. And you do kind of need those other two guys to show that they can have some more role versatility. But I think that's going to do it for us tonight. We're going to try to get into some scouting on this Gonzaga game. You know, we gave our goals, what we want to see out of Chet in this tournament. And right now, just for a little time check, Gonzaga's up 18-14 in the first half, 9:46 left. So hopefully we'll have some more content for y'all about, you know, how Chet looks. I think a lot of Rockets fans are slowly drifting into the Chet camp. I know Prod may be a holdout. I've been a holdout up to this point, but it seems like a lot of people are turning that direction. But that's going to do it for us for today. E, go ahead and plug your Twitter account. Let everyone know where they can find your stuff.
It's KJ Martin Season, KJMartinSZN. And yeah, I just want to say thank you guys for having me on. It's been a pleasure. Great podcast today. Looking forward to doing this more. See you guys in the spaces too. Thank you.
Yeah, man, you did really good. Was this your first podcast ever?
Yeah, it's my first ever podcast. Wow. Looking to do more.
Yeah, there you go, man. You did pretty good. The first podcast I ever did was with Nima and Lashard. So they let me just kind of ramble on for a while until I figured out how to tone it down a little bit. But Prad, go ahead and tell the people where they can find your stuff.
Y'all can find me at PaulAlvesNBA. That's PaulAlvesNBA. Everything I do, from podcasts like this one to articles to mock drafts to live shows on Twitter Spaces, will find itself linked on there.
Cool. And of course, you can follow me at Don Knock on Twitter. Follow the pod at Apollo Launchpad. Follow the Apollo HOU main account. Subscribe to the Twitch account at Apollo HOU on there. And then subscribe to the Apollo Podcast Network YouTube channel account. We are going to be getting more of these out on YouTube. So that helps us as well. And yeah, we have a game against the Lakers tomorrow. So everyone, I'm sure, is going to be excited for that. It's going to be a big game, just because there's a lot of fanfare involving the Lakers anytime they come into town. But until next time, be safe and go Rockets.